All right, Mr. Mason, we are live.
Well, that's great. I'm actually Dana White, and with me, as usual, is Mike Rose, and welcome to the Mike and Scotty show.
If only people could have the slightest idea of what the pre-show banter is like.
Well, that's it. So, there's a little inside hint as to what it was like. Mike and I were we just had a rousing debate as to whether I really look like Dana White.
It was settled when I told Scott he wasn't qualified to make that determination.
And the only I'm going to just assume that all of you know who Dana White is, because I don't want to get into it. But I guess I have to take Mike's word for it, because a dozen people or more have said that I look like this guy.
Listen, I showed Dana White to Karen, my wife, and she said, "Oh my God." So there you go.
I think I'm much more handsome,
I'm sure you do.
well, that's great. That's just great. So, folks, welcome to the pre-Halloween Mike and Dana show, and
That's
we're gonna
right. I didn't even think about that. What are you going as this year?
I'm gonna go as Dana White, and he's gonna go as Scott Mason.
Right. I would love to see that.
So, I have this new job. Right, I've been at this new company since May, and I love my job. It's twice as much work as the old job, but I love my job.
I have noticed that I don't hear a peep out of you
Yeah.
in between podcast recordings.
Nor does anybody else, and there's an apology forthcoming in this podcast to someone who deserves it. But they are sales coordinator, who is this woman who is just the best. Salesmen in general tend to make mistakes on things like, unimportant things like orders. And this woman just patiently fixes them.
Nobody knew how complicated orders were.
Right, exactly. Who knew? And so she's also kind of the cruise director. So she has coordinated this Halloween party, costume party, and I'm looking at this email and I'm thinking, I will absolutely under no circumstances be in the office on that day.
Right.
That's just really, really not my bailiwick.
You've got to draw the line somewhere.
And that's where I draw the line. Dressing up in some kind of 80s outfit. You know what? I went through the 80s. They sucked. The only thing worse than the 80s was the 70s.
You had hair in the 70s, didn't you?
I had hair in the 80s, but for what it's worth, it's all a memory now.
Right.
So
That was then.
that was then. This is now. So
Right.
this is my favorite time of year, Mike.
Yeah, it actually is a very productive time of year for me too. And the only thing I need to get used to is the rapid shortening of the days. So the past couple of times when I've gone for my walk, I find myself walking back like in the darkness, thinking, "Yeah, I got to start this earlier."
Yeah, and then again, I feel the same way. I mean, I'm in my office in the morning when it's still dark out. It's just getting light. And by 6 o'clock here in New England, it's just about dark out, so.
Well, before you get too sleepy, I just wanted to give a shout out to our friend of the show and our friend Ken Patterson.
Who?
And you remember Ken.
I'm sorry, Ken. I owe you about 10 phone calls. I love you
Ken's
know
got us on speed dial, and I had promised Ken, I think it was 2 weeks ago, but it feels like a few moments ago, based on how frenetic things have been here as well, which I'll get into. I had promised Ken that I was going to watch his show and then make arrangements with him to be on it.
Hmm.
And I'm looking forward to doing it the minute I get a moment. But let's put it this way: since the last time we recorded, the month included me having my first ever toothache, followed by which by the way came like on a Friday evening and had to go all weekend before it could be addressed, and ended up on Monday with a root canal.
Ah.
And tomorrow I'm going for my crown. And whenever I spell the word crown, I always put a dollar sign before it and after it. And so, try to sandwich all of those activities in and around everything else that's going on. And it's just that's my excuse, and I'm gonna go with that. But I'm gonna publicly go out on a limb here and say that before the next podcast, I will have found a way to sync up with Mr. Ken Patterson. So there.
Again, I owe Ken an apology because Ken has reached out to me 10 times in the past month and a half, and I just have not had an opportunity to call him back between work and baseball. It's just a really, really bad time of year for me. And
Been getting a lot
Ken.
of calls myself lately. It's like sometimes I go through periods of time where just everybody needs to talk to me for whatever reason. And sometimes you get to the end of the day and you realize, you know what I did today? I spoke on the phone. That's it.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know Ken Patterson, he is certainly the top professional photographer in the hobby these days. He is a monthly contributor to Model Railroad Hobbyist magazine. He is an incredibly talented model railroader and artist, and just a good guy. He's a social guy.
He's a much nicer guy than either you or myself.
Yeah, he is. Well, that's the Midwestern thing. You know,
Maybe.
he's. It is. It really is. And I don't like being rude to anybody. It's just a function of, like today he called me and it was in the middle of the workday. And it just I saw your name on the caller ID, Ken. And there was no way I could pick up that phone at that time.
No, I'm at the point where long-term personal friends that I've known for 40 years, I don't have to take their call all the time now. You know what I mean? I know that sounds ridiculous, but and because it is, but so Ken, it's not personal. It's actually happening. He tells me that he listens to the show all the time. He seems to be very up on what I'm doing. So, Ken, this is the first moment I've had to actually apologize.
Well, and so just as a Ken Patterson anecdote, you had kind of this guy had been trying to get my phone number, and he actually had reached out to you, Mike, and you had called me and said, "Hey, this guy, can I give him your phone number? He really wants to talk to you." And I said, "Well, who is it?" And he said, "It's this guy, Ken Patterson," and I knew the name. This was back in 2010. And I said, "Yeah, and it, for whatever reason we didn't connect." And I was out in Milwaukee at the NMRA National Convention, and I'm walking through the show hall, going from my booth to the Iwata booth, and I see this guy. He's like running towards me,
He saw his chance.
and I'm like, "What's going on here?" I mean, and he was like in a full sprint,
You
and
can run, but you can't hide.
he gets to within like 5 feet, and he goes, "You're Scott Mason, I'm Ken Patterson." And it was kind of the funniest introduction I think I've ever had. But he's just a sincere, nice guy, and I've enjoyed our friendship. So Ken, I promise you, I'll call you first chance I get.
We're both going to call you and not at the same time.
No, not at the same time. Although it'd be cool if we could do the show at the same time.
Well, you can't rule that out either.
So anyhow, you had yet another obsession. You're becoming prolific.
It sounds like a lot, but it's like the fourth one this year. I don't know
Well,
if
that's a
that's.
lot, Mike.
Maybe it's a lot for me. It's maybe not a lot for some people.
So hold on, let me put this in perspective here. You
It's
ha
more than
you've
you've had.
well for one clear obvious reason. When what month was the first of the four obsessions in?
Oh, that's true. Let's see. That would have been
See what I'm doing here?
maybe end of March, probably.
All right, so from the end of March to the end of September, you've had four obsessions. That's prolific.
And I built a third of a building. Is that a lot too?
You built a third of a building and you have never had four op sessions in a year, never mind basically what amounts to a 6 month time frame.
Think I did that once a few years ago.
Oh, that's the biggest lie I've ever heard.
Just 'cause you weren't invited.
Well, I'm never invited. That's the other thing. We need to really get to the crux of this. I mean, am I just a pretty face that knows how to host a podcast, or are we friends? What's the meaning behind our relationship here?
Oh, so many lines come to mind here. But what I would say to that is, well, obviously I blame you. Your availability is
Non-existent.
really, really, really bad. Aside from that, there's no reason you can't come to an
Well,
obsession.
the good news is I'm
I keep
probably
waiting
going
for
to.
your arm to fall off. I think once it does, you might have a chance to come to an obsession.
Well, in all honesty, my arm has actually felt pretty good this year. We're alluding to my rapidly concluding baseball season here, folks. And unfortunately, it appears that it's going to be a rather uphill climb if my team is to win a sixth straight championship, as we lost our first of a double elimination playoff game last night. So we've got a tough road ahead. But my arm.
Six straight, I have to admit, sounds a little hoggy.
Well, one of the coaches on one of the other teams said to me Sunday, he said, nobody feels bad for the Pirates. I said, no, I'm well aware that we're not garnering much sympathy out there. My arm feels good. It's been, other things. I've had calf muscle injuries. I've had what appears to have been pulled muscle near my shoulder blade. But otherwise, I'm healthy and good to go, and I've got about a week and a half now to our next game, so I've got some time to do some rehab and some strength conditioning, and hopefully be ready for the next game.
There is also this odd syndrome, which we could probably figure it out pretty quickly why it happens. But I think for a lot of people, as long as they feel okay, the older they get, the busier they are, and the more they do, and the more they like to do, because in theory, you're building knowledge and you're building capabilities and interests and what have you. So, you either slow down and go sit in a chair and atrophy, or you just do more and more all the time. So I'm trying to keep that snowball from rolling downhill too much, but when we get talking about my upcoming fall here, you're going to see that that's going to take a little while for me to not have that be the case, because everything is going straight out right now.
Well, you're a perfect example of a busy person, and the benefits that come from that. And I think to a degree I am too. And I tried to take a page out of Dick Elwell's book. Dick turned 82 in August, and you never know what to look at him.
Exactly. And I mean, you hear the stories about people who retire and they're dead in 6 months. And I guess the concept of retirement for me is sort of an alien concept, because I've always pretty much enjoyed what I'm doing, because how I spend my time is important to me. So rather than spend a lot of time doing something I hate, I would rather take the time to find something that I want to do that I can also make a couple of bucks at, and that's kind of how I've always done it. So I think that is in part why I'm always busy, because this, like, I was just talking with Karen yesterday. I said, I am never, ever bored. And that's because this seems like there's just an unlimited amount of interesting things to do.
Yep, absolutely. So we strayed from your obsession, but
Oh yeah, well, I can get back to that. So,
well, no, so
I just need someone to remind me of what the heck I was talking about.
yeah, no, so I guess first of all, I congratulate you for getting this layout, for all of the dynamite that's gone off and the dust that settled in your basement. You've put the layout back together again to the point where, you're conducting regular operating sessions now, which has been your goal all along.
Well, the impetus for this one was that I wanted to try to get one more in before things really hit the fan with the addition project. And I think the timing, I think I got the timing right. Well, I'll get to the project update. I wanted to just finish, I guess, the op session first, rather than sound like a complete scatterbrain here. But the op session was, the usual small bunch of folks, although I did invite another friend who had not seen the layout in a couple of years. So the last time he was here was in the pre-Kaboom era. And although I've sent him updates and kept in touch and all of that, I really treated the first few op sessions this year as experimental. This might have been the first one where I felt like, yeah, we got this, and we did. It really went off like clockwork. And Mike Confalone said he thought it was the best op session ever. He just had a really good time. His buddy Joe sent me a nice email and said he just couldn't think of a nicer way to spend the day than he spent here that day. So that's I take stuff like that really to heart. I mean, you love to hear stuff like that. But it's so if you were to ask me, well, why is that? I'm not entirely sure, except that it's the right group of people, it's the right number of people. Right number of trains, layout's working fine. Since the last op session, I put in an extra booster, so I had like zero problems with enough power to run all of the engines. And we run a pretty good amount of engines in an op session. I mean, I think probably, it's got to be around 40.
Well, most of the trains are double-headed.
Well, actually, I went in two different directions this time. I ran two locals with a single engine just to see how that would go. I ran another local with a pair of SW1500s for the first time,
Really?
which was kind of a cool thing to do.
I want that train the next time I come over.
Yeah, that's available. It was a Conrail blue SW1500 and an X-Reading paint out. So it was a cool pair of engines, and I personally wanted to see how they would do out on the road in terms of pulling a decent sized local over a little bit of grades, but it was a non-issue. There was no problem at all. And so for some of the locals, we reduced the number of cars a little bit, and we reduced the power a little bit. And then on some of the road trains, I had 5 and 6 units on them. So that made them sound and feel more like big road trains without necessarily increasing their size very much. You know what I mean? So, I don't think any two op sessions are going to be exactly the same. It keeps people interested, keeps me interested, and introduces new elements into it that you kind of see how it goes. And sometimes you try something, you say, yeah, that was interesting, we won't be doing that again. But most of the time, it's just, it adds an element of interest to it. So it's how I keep things fresh. From the host standpoint, I'm looking at the layout all the time, but you never see things happening the way you do in an op session, because you don't really run the layout that way when it's just yourself or when it's just Dave and I on a Monday night. You know what I mean? So, from the host standpoint, that's what's cool about an op session. I didn't run a train this op session. In fact, the first train I ran was one leftover train that we didn't get to run at the op session. The single one we didn't get to run. So, I traditionally will run a cleanup of whatever didn't get to happen. On the Monday night after an op session, and this one was no exception. And that was the loaded coal train that I posted the video of on the podcast group and other places. That's on my YouTube channel.
So, I think I alluded to this or drew the analogy the la after the last operating session, and that's that, you're kind of running the Apollo test missions, down in your basement.
Sure.
And then you've come a long way. You've learned a lot from each of the four. Each of the four has progressed favorably.
Well, I guess what's interesting about these post-Kaboom op sessions is that although most of the layout didn't really change, but just the addition of having Pitston Yard basically changed everything. It used to be that you'd have these road trains that you ran through, and they would work at Mehoopany and then continue on to staging, and that was it. And then you'd have locals that would leave out of staging and go out and do their thing, and then they'd return to staging, and that was it. So for the purposes of this, I actually had to rethink how I was going to be running the session, because now, as you know, I don't use cards and I don't use Confalon's waybill system. I use switch lists. And I've modified my switch lists over time to try to make them easier to understand and easier to use, but most importantly, from my standpoint, easy to do. The last thing I want to do is replicate a clerk's job on a railroad. That's just not what I want to be doing, And you could see why they had an army of people doing this because it's a lot of work.
Sure.
So I try to do it in such a fashion that it's not a lot of work. But I had so in my previous scenario, the paperwork that I had and the way I did it was perfectly adequate. The minute you have a yard and locals that need to be made up in that yard, you need paperwork now to run that yard. And we did that at the previous session, and we kind of based it on the same model that we use at Mehoopany, because it's a similar kind of issues. You're trying to keep track of what's there by track and what it's for, and it allows you to put together your trains or your blocks of cars. And Mehoopany being this big industry with three yards, it has the same issues as a typical yard would have. So that was no problem. But now you have paperwork going out with your crew. And this might seem obvious, but it only really became obvious to me once we actually started doing this. It's fine to tell the local, based on what you know is in their train, what to go out and deliver. And in the past, I would say, pick up the cars there as empties and bring them back on your train. And it didn't matter that there wasn't any additional information at that point. But now you're bringing them back to the yard. And when they get back to the yard, guy running the yard wants to know, well, what are these? What do I do with these? Where do they go? Which direction are they heading? Are they loads or empties? None of that information was being captured on the picked up cars out on the layout, and I needed to find an easy way to create that. So I ended up modifying my switch list with another field, and we put some gateway designations in there so we know if it's going to Buffalo, or it's going to Allentown, or it's going to the DNH, which are the three major interchange points now for this layout. And as a matter of fact, for the first time, we ran a local that won't be really needed until the new building, but I wanted to see how adding it to the mix would affect things. We are also now regularly running a DNH train, no matter what. So that we can get used to the idea of interacting with an extra railroad, which has added, I think for everybody, a great deal of interest.
I feel like I'm missing out. I want you to know that.
Well, if I run an op session in the winter, when you're not playing baseball, you're invited.
Well, I'm good from, the end of October to the end of April, ostensibly.
Yeah, I can't rule out that I'll do one more op session. The reason that I'm kind of being cagey about it is I'd be lying if I thought that I had a really good bead on what my fall quarter is going to really look like once things get going here. Maybe that's a good segue into the addition project update here. But I think I had said last time that by hook or by crook, I was going to get a plan out of the architect before we recorded again. It took that's why they say project management is an art rather than a science. I mean, it really took all of my accumulated knowledge to strong arm the guy without having him hate me by the time it was done. It is not easy to do that. And I knew that I was one of like 60 projects, and when I say 60, I mean literally 60 projects that he had on his docket. So I think I allowed him enough rope to hang himself, and then I got to a point where I just had no more time to waste and let him know that, and then really just kind of did the project manager thing and made sure that every meeting I had with him had a follow-up meeting scheduled and expectations of what the deliverable was going to be for that meeting, and just kind of formalized it without making it overtly so. And that seemed to be what was needed. So since we last spoke about it, I had my meeting with the town, passed conservation without the need for an expensive order of conditions. I just filed a notice of intent, and the conservation officer said to the board,
Nice.
"This is just joining two buildings over a driveway that's already there. It doesn't have any wetlands implications. We recommend that we just say this is a non-issue," and that was it. Of course, he had told me in advance that's how it would go, and like I said, Sun Tzu, right? Every battle is won before it's fought. So
For sure, yeah.
the key for me there was to go to conservation and before I did anything and say, "Here's what I'd like to do. Am I likely to run into any issues? And if so, what do I have to do?" And that's the right way to approach it with these guys, because they like being consulted in advance, and they're happy to tell you what the considerations are. And if you do that, it saves everybody a lot of time and effort. So that part went great. I had to take another 2 weeks or so to get the final plans out of the architect because we had to do he had to do what are called sections, which are the really what these guys get paid to do because it's sort of a cross section of the construction, so the builder can look at that and see how things internally connect from a framing standpoint. It's a very interesting piece of drawing that to the layperson wouldn't mean a whole lot except for them to say, "Cool,"
Right.
I finally got all of those plans last Thursday. And immediately got on the phone to my builder because that's the next hurdle, and I am now undergoing the same process with him where I am trying to get him to pay more attention to my project than other projects that he has. So and so it goes. It'll be the same thing with the foundation guys and all of that. So I mean, it's going to be an adventure. I can get this done before the winter if all goes well. So, how often does that happen? But failure's not an option. Like once you break ground, you just can't. You've got to see it through. It's possible they'll be, applying roof shingles in January. I mean, I don't really know how it's going to go.
Well, if
I
we
can
get a
already.
relatively mild winter,
Yeah, the key is the site work, right? You've got to get the foundation and
right.
concrete work done and the floor poured and all of that jazz. But you're right. If you don't have like the world's worst winter, it doesn't faze these guys. Although I will say that, you're building a future heated space between two heated spaces and you're using doors and windows from each heated space in the perimeter of the new space. So there are going to be times here where you really need some weather that's not awful in order to do it right,
Sure.
So I'll be sleeping lightly, until I get an intact shell there, you know. And once I have that, I'm literally going to take the rest of the winter and maybe the probably the spring, and continue to work on the design of the layout and relocate my install business out there, and you know, rearrange things with my workshop so some things in the workshop go out there. I mean, there's so many infrastructure related things to do that once I have those all in place, they will greatly facilitate the building of this new big final addition to the layout. So it would be ludicrous to do it in reverse order. I've got to do it like that, you know. So
Sure.
if I had to guess, I mean, you know, and we're extending so far out that it's nothing more than wishful thinking, really, at this point. But I would think almost definitely by this time next year, construction will have commenced. And maybe it'll be a little bit earlier, but I'll bet it wouldn't be a lot earlier because I don't want to rush it. I want to get this one right.
So you don't think it'll be this year then?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not for the layout building
Oh, for
portion.
the layout. I'm talking about the building.
No. I gotta get the building happening. And there's, like I say, there's plenty of things related to that that I need to concern myself with before I can really turn my attention to the whole reason for doing it.
So have you got a sense of what is going to go in this building with regards to the layout? I mean, you don't have to let the cat out of the bag, but
Yeah, no,
just.
I mean, it's not a secret or anything, but I know what I want to do. And one thing that I've learned is until you're actually looking at the space, or at least until I'm actually looking at the space, because some people are really good with scale drawings and being able to relate that to reality. I'm not bad with it, but I'm not particularly skilled with it either. And it's much easier for me to stand there and look at the physical space rather than try to do too much on paper with it. I always have the tendency to do more on paper than you end up wanting to do once you're standing there looking at it. You know, that's just, you know,
Right.
my failing, if you will, in that
Yep.
regard. I'm more visual in terms of 3D than the 2D scale drawings. So I'm trying not to get too etched in stone with anything resembling a plan. By the same token, just today, when I was out in the driveway taking advantage of some gorgeous weather and the fact that my oil servicing guy was occupying the entire basement and therefore I couldn't use it for what I would normally use it for, like installations, I decided to really put some thought into actually, I think I was employing five different 25 or 30 foot tape measures today simultaneously, and I would like lay out you know a length of something, and then use another one to indicate how wide it was, and you know what I was basically trying to do was make sure that what I wanted to do would fit in the building that I'm building, and if it didn't, what would I have to give up? And believe it or not, by the time I got done, I decided to make the building 4 feet longer.
I find that incredibly difficult to believe not.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, when you realize that you think people are going to think I'm even more nuts than they do right now. But on the other hand, what are you doing this for, right? You know, I'm doing this for a reason. And I'm doing this once, and it would be kind of nuts to have the ability to make it what you need and do that rather than have the ability to make it what you need and not do that and then regret it from that point on. You know,
Sure.
that 4 feet actually makes a huge difference in what I want to do out there. Because what I'm going to do out there, I've almost definitely decided on, you know, conceptually, is Pittston Yard is definitely going out there. And where Pittston Yard is now, and also the staging that's under it, that whole unit the section that I lowered and the yard that I built on top, I am going to unbolt it from the wall and put it on some temporary dollies, and with a couple or three people, I'm going to roll it out the door into its new location. And where it was, I'm going to build one of the Conrail D&H interchanges that I'm all hot about. I think it's going to be a real signature scene. You know, it's just a really, as soon as I saw it in real life the last time I went down in June, I just kind of stood there and looked at it with wide eyes and said, "Whoa, I get this. I can build this. You know, I can just see how this would be built and how cool it would be." So, yeah, I think I talked about it before. That's that one where you have a road bridge, which I may or may not include, but the prototype has a road bridge crossing the D&H, which is crossing Conrail, which is crossing a stream.
Wow, okay.
All stacked up like that. And I'm not saying it would be the easiest thing to pull off convincingly, but hey, you know, why not a challenge, right? It just looked like a very appealing thing to try to do. And I can do it by utilizing that entire length of Pittston Yard as a way to do it without having it look too compressed. And that then allows me to do some of the industries south of Pittston that I really would like to do in the area just south of where Pittston Yard is now. And it allows me to incorporate the D&H and a run to Taylor Yard. So
Okay.
my goal is to put Taylor Yard out there and a run beyond Taylor to staging so that you're not using Taylor as like a stub-ended yard. And put Pittston Yard out there and pretty much, you know, maybe incorporate a little bit of the P&E short line, you know, but basically if I can get those two things out there and do it right, it then opens up all kinds of opportunities inside to do everything else I want to do. So I am excited about it, and I'm trying not to get, like I said, too married to the details, because once you get into it, after you see the space starts telling you what you can do and or what you should do and what you should maybe not try to do.
Right. Well, you know, I think the general inclination is to try to stuff 10 pounds of you know what.
Yeah, no, I mean, I mean, Confalone actually got me thinking a long time ago about less is more, and it's like it's always the right answer, you know. So that's why I need to take my plan of what I'd like to do and compare it to how the space hits me when I see it for the first time before, you know, getting too married to anything in particular with it, you know.
Yep. Good rule of thumb to live by. And, you know, I mean, how many model railroads have you seen over the years where it's just like, why do they try to do all of that?
Well, I mean, you know, I can see how it happens because
Oh, yeah.
people want to do various things, and when you think about it, I mean, you know, I that's exactly what I did before I learned that that was a bad idea. You know, it's a very human thing to do, but it's just not the right thing to do if you really care about how it looks, right? So.
Well, and it's, you know, if you're looking for that balance between operation and scenery and structures and, you know, all of the things that make up a model railroad, a good model railroad, then yeah, you're absolutely right. But I also agree with you, the temptation is there because the real estate is so limited, Mike.
Always. Doesn't matter how much room you have, you never have enough room to do what you want to do unless maybe you're Ken MacQuarrie, I don't know. I bet even he had to make some compromises.
I bet he did. And, you know, long before double-deck railroads and triple-deck railroads and mushroom designs and all that sort of stuff became in vogue, I had an opportunity to work with Jimmy Simmons' dad on his home layout in as large a basement as you've ever seen. And the running joke was, if we only had 2 more feet, yeah,
Isn't it always the case? Yep.
we had 80 feet of length and 30 feet of depth, and we, you know, we were still looking for more.
Well, the other side of that is that space is so precious that you also don't want to waste it, right? So you're trying to do the most with it. You're trying to use it efficiently because it is just in such short supply. You know, you're constrained by your foundation walls, unless, of course, you do what I do.
Well, we were, I think we were good modelers, but there were certain things that we didn't totally understand or, couldn't grasp, and selective compression was one of those things.
Yeah, for me, I had to actually make those mistakes in 3D and look at that and go, now I get it. Some
Well, you know,
people can do that before without actually doing it. I wasn't one of them.
we were trying to model, the scenes to scale, and so the challenge was to see how close to the prototype, we could get this in terms of size. And
Sure.
for instance, the Rutland's Bellows Falls yard, I think, if memory serves, we were within about 20 scale feet of being prototypically correct.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very rare occurrence.
Yeah, and we were pretty proud of ourselves for doing that. But there's a trade-off to that, right? I mean, it's a huge chunk of real estate for what, by the prototype standards, is a very, very small yard.
Yeah, I'll bet it looked right with a capital R, though.
Well, you know what it what was great about it was, from my perspective anyways, from a structure builder's perspective, it allowed me to model every single structure that was in and around that yard,
Which you never get to do.
which you never get to do. So that was cool. But most people don't have that luxury. So the compromises become greater, and your sense of, did I do this right? Should I have done this? Should I have done that? Did I put too much into a particular area, become much more magnified.
Well, speaking of you building structures, and
Yeah.
we didn't cover this in our earlier conversation, but I'm guessing you haven't had one single solitary mental CPU cycle to devote to your building project there that you were contemplating.
I haven't, as a matter of fact. I've got a couple of things going that are much smaller in scope and are manageable for me at this point. But as some of or remember from previous podcasts, I went in 50% on a laser, which sits in a buddy's basement, and I've never used once. And he's had it for almost a year and a half now.
He's not
And that's
using it either.
no, he uses it. He owns a company that makes NASCAR and Indy steering wheels for people who race online.
Okay.
And
Sounds pretty
so
specific.
it and he well this guy is just an incredible craftsman, and he's also very technology savvy.
I didn't know that was a thing.
It's very much a thing, and
Huh.
these steering wheels are almost as expensive as the real ones.
Jeez.
And he's got, a 1.5 person operation going, and he's pedal to the metal, no pun intended, flat out, to the point where he quit his full-time job over a year ago to devote to this. And he's got CNC machines. He's got the laser cutter. He's doing, resin casting.
So he must have been very happy to have you provide half of a laser cutter for his booming business.
Well, the laser was a deal. We got it came from China, and it's got an oversized bed, and it was $1,900.
Huh.
And
The
it's
kind of thing that would have been 20 grand when they first came out or more.
oh my God, 50 grand.
Wow.
Yeah. From what I hear, it runs flawlessly.
Now, how does it compare to the kind of machines that, say, Jimmy Simmons is using?
Well, So the kind of the origins of these, in terms of amateur use, or non really 24/7 production use, was that they first became well known when stenciling was a big hobby, and stenciling and scrapbooking.
So they were cutting very thin things. Okay.
So, unlike manufacturing applications where you need high wattage and high speed, they were able to lower the wattage to 40, 50 watts a machine, and
Slow it down.
reduce the speed, and therefore lengthen the life of the laser tube, which is the costly piece in this thing. Which not only lowered the price of the machines, but made them more affordable on a day forward standpoint for people who would buy them.
Which then made them able to build and sell a lot more of them, so economy of scale brought the price down from there.
Exactly. Unfortunately, the bubble burst in the scrapbooking hobby literally overnight. It went from a multi-billion dollar industry to almost zero. So these
I
companies,
never even heard of that as a hobby.
yeah.
I know nothing about it.
Well, I not to sound sexist, but I believe it was, probably a female-driven hobby,
Okay.
scrapbooking. So these companies had designed these smaller lasers, and now they needed a place to market them. So. Someone got the bright idea that you could cut sheet basswood with it, and off we went. And
I think what you're suggesting, though, is that Jimmy is using a much heavier duty one because he's just cutting all day, all the time.
he's got two now. And no, I think they're both probably 40 watters. And I believe the first one he bought was kind of the entry level system made by this company, Epilogue. The comparison I'm trying to make is with this one that we bought from China, which is an 80 watt machine that will run all day at pretty fast speeds. But again, you it's a fulcrum. You're balancing speed and intensity of that laser with the material that you're cutting, because what you don't want to do is just completely burn the edges of the wood, and that can
Right.
happen, if you're using it on too high a power setting. So your speed goes down a little bit, and which is fine. I'm not doing production runs, and nor will I ever again. What I'm going to use it for are one-offs, and if someone needs a structure cut, I can do it for them.
Yeah.
And eventually I'm going to put these designs through the laser and see what I come up with. But there's some movement in my life coming up in the next 12 months or so, and there'll be some changes. And so it would be probably my best interest to kind of wait until things settle back down again,
Yep.
before I went down that road. However, that doesn't mean that I'm not trying to keep my hands and mind busy. About 7 or 8 months ago, if you remember, I was building a model of a British Spitfire fighter plane.
You were?
Yeah, several months ago.
That's like a lifetime ago for me.
I know, I know. It's this 1/12 scale model. The damn thing is huge.
Okay.
It's got a 3 foot wingspan on it.
It's a styrene isom.
No, it the superstructure is laser cut plywood, and the shell is aluminum that you emboss with a rivet tool.
Wow.
And the panels come pre-cut, but you've got to kind of bend them a little bit to fit around the frame.
Do you
And
build the frame also?
yeah, oh yeah, you build everything.
And how
And
are you attaching the aluminum to the wooden frame?
Now, so this is where I my concerns were, and they became true.
Canopy glue. No.
No, it's an application that won't work with canopy glue. But what they recommend that you do is they give you teeny tiny drill bits, and they suggest that you drill through the aluminum. They provide teeny tiny brads that look like rivet heads,
Okay.
and you hammer them. Literally, this is how big the plane is. You can hammer these things into the holes that you're drilling, but they also suggest that you super glue the panels to the wood. And as you know, having glued many objects together over the years,
Oh, yeah.
the mix of metal and wood, unless you're using cyan epoxy, really, really, really doesn't go too well. It's difficult to make that connection.
Yep, I agree.
So there were issues with that.
What about like teeny weeny screws? Would that be better?
Probably not. So that was issue one. Issue two was that my other concern was that you're working with two dissimilar materials. One is a natural material that is going to expand and contract just a little bit over the course of seasons.
It's that
And
sheer force that usually breaks the bonds anyway.
yeah, and the other is a manufactured material that has no give whatsoever. And my concern was that there were going to be gaps in these panels, which also became true. That was frustrating. The third issue that I had was that the weight of the superstructure was such that when you the wing came in two halves, and it mechanically attached, each half attached to the other, with screws. And the weight of the wings was such that the plywood wouldn't hold the screws.
Huh.
So that was a problem, to the point where I finally said, you know what, I just need to put this in the closet for a while, because I'm getting really, really frustrated with it, and it was a $1,200 investment.
Oh my God.
So I'm going to come back to it, but I need to take a few deep breaths. So in the meantime, this same company, they're called Model Space, and I suggest, if you haven't heard about them, you go on the internet and take a look. They make a lot of different types of models, and they're all extremely large and extremely intricate. My girlfriend's kids are caught up in the latest Star Wars craze. And coming from the first generation that went through that craze, I kind of have that synergy with them. And obviously looking for ways to strengthen that relationship.
Sure.
I bought another model from this company, Model Space, and it's a model of the Millennium Falcon.
Okay.
And
How
if you're
big
not
is
from,
that?
well, so all right, so this is where it gets interesting. So for those of you who don't know, the Millennium Falcon was the ship that Han Solo piloted, and it's considered a freighter, if you will. Well, there's no prototype ship, right? It's all make-believe. So what's the scale? Now,
Right.
how do you determine how to create a model of this thing?
It just needs to be in scale with itself.
Exactly. So what they did, and this was pretty ingenious, they took the movie props and they based the model on the scale of the movie props.
Makes sense.
So I thought that was pretty cool. But the detail, so now this is a totally different construction process. The superstructure for this is cast aluminum panels, if you will, grid panels that
Cast.
are, yeah. They so they're screwed together, bolted together, to create the top circle and the bottom circle, and then the two circles are attached, and then the panels, the outer panels, are cast in a really, really high quality resin.
Wow.
And there's also complete interior details. So if you remember kind of what the interior of this ship looks like, with the semi-round seating area with the
Yeah, I mean, it's
game
been a
table.
while.
All that is in detail.
Wow.
And there's all sorts of extraneous piping and
Sounds
laser
expensive.
cannons. It's another $1,200 investment.
Jesus.
So what this company does is they send you a portion of the kit every month, and they whack you for $70.
Seriously?
Yeah. And what I like, there's two things I like about it. One, it's really, really easy to build. You just have to put the time into it.
So it's well engineered.
It's very, very well engineered, unlike the Spitfire to a degree. The other thing too is that each package takes me about 2 hours to do. So I've got the time to put into it.
Yeah, even you can come up with 2 hours in a month.
The drawback is that there's so much detail on this thing that it's a little bit tedious.
It's such an intriguing marketing concept. I wonder if there could ever be any parallel to that in the model train world.
Well, I suspect there could be, and in fact, this company, Model Space, actually puts out at least one locomotive model that I'm aware of. It's based on a European prototype.
Are they a European company?
They are a British company, I'm fairly certain. In this case, because of the licensing with Star Wars, they're tied into Disney,
Okay.
which I don't know if that's good or bad. But again, I certainly can't complain about the quality of the 6 or 7 months worth of the project that I've gotten through at this point.
Well, the Disney tie-in probably has something to do with the price.
No, I don't know about. I think it's, I'm sure they're getting their cut.
Right.
Quite frankly, if you look at what you get for, each month, the profit margin is evident. But
I guess there's
you
a
know.
lot of faith involved that the company will still be around to get all of the model.
Well, certainly. And except to say that they have been around for several years, and they've got, I don't know, I bet they have 30 different models.
Could you buy the whole model if you wanted to?
I actually just saw, this hasn't been the case in the past, but I actually just saw something, some email that came out that said, now you can buy it all at once. It doesn't really make a lot of sense at this point for
Maybe the
me to do
initial
that.
reason for that was because they didn't have the whole thing built and designed yet.
That may have been part of it. I think the other part of it too is that they may not have had enough clients subscribing to go into full-fledged production. They were just kind of doing it on an on-demand basis.
Right.
So I would think with something like this that's probably very popular, that they've now got enough that they can do this. But I don't know that that's the case with all of their models. But
I think
I
we
would
should
say,
put some pictures on the podcast group. I mean,
yeah.
I'd just be curious to see it myself.
Yeah, no, I certainly can. All of the panels, all of the resin panels, are pre-painted and weathered to a degree, although that there are additional weathering suggestions that will tie in with finishing the model.
Oh, so it's not just an unpainted kit.
No.
Wow.
No. So yeah, I'll post some pictures. And again, it's model. If you Google Model Space, the name of the company is D'Agostini Model Space. But if you just Google Model Space, you'll find it.
Very interesting.
So it's great. I look forward to getting that package. It's not something that's setting me back, time wise.
Right. Sounds like a low stress way to relax.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, and the damn thing, it's if you make a circle with your arms out in front of you,
Right.
that's the size of it.
Wow.
You know, it's a good 24 inches in circumference.
So will this ultimately reside, hanging from the dining room ceiling, or?
I don't know ultimately where what will become of it.
I got it. I'll ask Tina.
Yeah, I mean that's what it's going to come down to. I'm sure that somewhere in a 3,000 square foot house we can find a spot for it, but so we'll see. Now getting off of that and back to trains, if you don't mind.
That's okay.
You have a YouTube channel, you said?
Doesn't everybody?
I don't have a YouTube channel.
Well, if you had videos, you'd probably want a YouTube channel. I
I
am
guess I'll never
told,
get
now
videos.
I'm kind of late to the party on this myself. I think a lot of the people who have been shooting movies with their phones forever, or guys like Ken Patterson, have been all over this for quite a while. But I've always felt like, yeah, that's something I've got to get to. And of course, I spend enough time on a computer because, for those of you who don't know, I'm in the IT world, which means that, and that partially explains why I have no hair. So I'm not always looking for more ways to spend additional time on the computer. In fact, the hobby is supposed to be how I get away from being on the computer. On the other hand, I know that, for example, with the install business, Dartmouth Locomotive Works, I had a conversation with a friend who said I was just nuts for not posting videos of my work because he said, the way the engines move and the way that they sound is something that can only be conveyed with video if you're not in person.
No.
You can talk about it, you can try to describe it, you can have pictures, but without video, I mean that's really your best advertising. And once I got my capitulated and got my smartphone, I was out of my last excuse for not doing it. You can thank my son for that. So I started shooting these little videos, and it's actually not that hard to do, and you sort of need a place to put them, right? So what I've been told, and again, excuse me for sounding like a neophyte on this, but I am, at some point, at some level of viewership, you can actually make a couple of coins from YouTube on your channel.
Really?
So, I mean, I think you need probably one hell of a lot more than I have at this point in time, but I'm okay with having small viewership right now because I'm what I don't want to do is get too out there while I'm learning what the heck I'm doing, So, basically I decided every time I do an install that's even remotely noteworthy, I'm going to shoot a little video of it and put it there. It's also nice for the customer because they get to see it and hear it and see that it's actually a thing even before it ships from here, So it's a nice way to do it. And every once in a while, particularly with Alcos, particularly for Mr. Confalone, I'll send the video and say, no, that's the wrong Alco file. It needs to be the this or the that, and he'll cue me in as to which obscure Alco file he actually wanted that he could have told me about in advance, but well, just didn't. So it beats well, he has his own programmer now, but in the old days it would have to come back to me and I'd have to upload a new file into it.
Oh,
So
God.
but and not everybody has a programmer. So I think my point is these days from a promotional standpoint, everything you do needs to sort of tie into one another. And I got some of this from my son too, who's building his kayak business down there in Florida. And he's got his Instagram updating Facebook, and you know what I mean? It's ridiculous, really, from a millennial standpoint, what they do and just kind of take for granted,
Yeah.
so I'm definitely playing catch up ball on all of that, but right now my goal is to just not embarrass myself too much, and just kind of learn what to do.
I'm gonna get a YouTube channel.
I think you should. I mean, you could put anything on it.
I could put like cage fighting on it.
You could put you pitching on it.
Oh God.
Actually, if you should consider taking up MMA when you're done with your baseball career.
Yeah, promoting MMA.
Whatever. Yeah,
Yeah.
if I'm telling you, if you walked into a small gym with the right big grin, and I've seen it on you, you could pull it off.
Okay. All right. I need some coaching,
I'm just the guy to do it. I'll have to clear my schedule, of course.
Okay. I'm gonna look into that. I know that there are some of my videos that are on YouTube. The ones that
That sounds like a real copyright violation.
well no well yes and no they're ones that manufacturers underwrote the production for,
Oh, okay.
but they still don't own the copyrights to them either. But
But
I don't
that's how they're getting them out there, obviously.
yeah and I don't care. Really? It's all okay. I've sold enough DVDs to make myself happy. Crazy. I thought this said Craig. I couldn't read my own handwriting. Well, we talked about the addition, so we don't need
Yes.
to do that again.
Right.
So why are we
Still talking?
are we still talking about this?
This has been an interesting way to bring the show to a
This
conclusion
is
this month.
so, folks.
Why are we still talking? That's a
but
first. I like it though.
see what you have to look forward to when you get older, folks.
Everything's always new to us now.
Yeah, every day's a new day. Oh, hey, look, a model railroad. It's not so bad. As long as you have someone to take care of you.
Well, I'm.
I think probably the best thing to do at this point, Mike, is just jump out a window.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, we could.
Or we could just say, see you next month, everybody.
All right, let's do that. See you next month, everybody.